Hello, friends. Now we're closing in on the end of the book in the way that I've done it. I began on page 61 and went to the end of the book on page 701. And then I took up again the pages from the beginning to 61, and it's my hope that this evening here I'll be able to finish the commentary I have so far on this wonderful, instructive book on how we can cooperate with the externalization of the hierarchy and called externalization of the hierarchy. So anyway, let's see if we have a little segue here. Yes, we have the coming together of the educational group, the legislature, and the law enforcement. They all are mutually supportive, and that's what we have been discussing. So now, we continue. In view of the steady progress towards religious unity, now probably we're dealing with the sixth group now, which has proceeded apace during the past 150 years, maybe, shall we say, dating from around the year 1800, the work of the sixth group, the religious workers, it says here, religion in the New Age, as is also the case with the first group, telepathic communication, promises rapid results. This is necessarily, however necessarily dependent upon the skill in action and the willingness of the group members and allied groups to proceed with slowness and with tact. Okay, well, so often the religious pronouncements don't have either of those. Okay. The moment any idea enters the religious field, it gains immediate momentum from the fact that the outstanding characteristic of the human consciousness is the sense of the innermost or the real, a recognition of subjective destiny and an innate knowledge of the reaching out to the unknown God. Well, sometimes that unknown God is known as the one about whom naught may be said, but for practical purposes, even our planetary logos is for us the unknown God. Therefore, any truth or presentation of truth or method which has in it the possibility of producing a nearer approach to divinity or a more rapid understanding of the deeper being evokes an immediate response and reaction, and there is consequently much need for caution and considered action. Okay. So we'll talk about that kind of speed, which can lead to incorrect action. And in this field where there is so far so much emotion, we have to be very, very careful about it, because it can be unwise and can lead even to what DK has warned about, a possible religious war. Now the question is, has that possibility been overcome? There were some periods in the 21st century so far, and we're just very early into the 21st century, where it looked like the Christian and the Muslim faiths were militantly and with a warlike attitude confronting each other. We'll see whether that ends up being the possibility, or whether the major danger there has passed. There are many persecutions, and the karma of the Crusades and that which prompted the Crusades, a militant kind of Islam, perhaps, these things are still persisting. Okay, I have already indicated to you, he says, the form that the religion of the New Age will take. So, See the Reappearance of the Christ. This is a book that has been written, apparently, before this article came out. I think the article is from 1948, and maybe the book was more like 47. It will be built around the periods of the full moon, wherein certain great approaches will be made to the world of reality, also around two periods of massed approaches to be made at the time of the major eclipse of the moon and the sun during the year. So here the value of the eclipses. Okay. The value of the eclipses is directly stated. And we do know those are very potent full moon periods when strong eclipses, more exact eclipses, occur. So the new approach to religion, it will be built around the periods of the full moon and around the periods of massed approaches to be made at the time of the major eclipse of the moon and of the sun during the year. Is there only one, or maybe there are more than one? There are lunar eclipses and there are solar eclipses at the time of the new moon. Lunar eclipses more at the time of the full moon. The two major full moon approaches will be those of the Waisak full moon and the full moon of June. Well, he's already told us in the 1946 Waisak message that the Waisak might be fading out in its importance, and the Buddha's presence may no longer be part of what occurs at that period of the Taurus full moon. Now, this is written maybe 33 years before the year 1981. I think it was then when Mary Bailey at the headquarters of Arcane School had determined that the period may have come, half a 70-year period, beginning in 1946, with 3.5 decades leading to the year 1981. Now, you know, the degree to which any of this is confirmed is still awaiting a definite knowledge. So anyway, we do have the Buddha full moon or the Waisak full moon, at which time in the future, representatives of the Buddha and of the Christ later for the next full moon will be found in every country. And maybe it will be, it seemed to say, one disciple particularly would be the representative of the Buddha at the time of the Waisak festival. So that's many countries and many representatives. And one of the Christ, representing the Christ in each country. And this, as we understand, will take a while to fulfill. And maybe the reappearance of the Christ will see to the gradual fulfillment of this mode of contacting the people at the time of these important festivals. Anyway, the Waisak festival certainly will be modified in an interesting manner that does not require necessarily the presence of the Buddha in the Waisak Valley, his materialization in the Waisak Valley. So, the two major full moon approaches will be those of the Waisak full moon and the full moon of June, one hitherto consecrated to the Buddha, who embodied the wisdom of God. And what's that word hitherto doing there? And the other to the Bodhisattva, known to the Christians as the Christ, who embodied the love of God. I guess we don't know for how many years the Buddha has visited the Waisak Valley during those crucial 8 minutes at the time of the Taurus full moon. The centuries have been involved in that visitation. The platform of the New World Religion. What's interesting here is that people who are dogmatically adhering to certain limited ideas about what religion is and what salvation is and what redemption is and who the Christ is and who the Buddha is, they will not accept these ideas unless they are offered the kind of education which allows them to really understand the greater possibilities which are true and not childish. So the educators have a great task in front of them. The platform of the New World Religion will have in it three major presentations of truth. Here we go again, you know, three, a list of three presentations for each one of the seed groups, or three factors which have to be taken into consideration. So the platform of the New World Religion will have in it three major presentations of truth, or three major doctrines, if such an undesirable word can be permitted, because it's a word that is associated with rigidity, acquiescence, and the absence of intelligent thought. It is with the elaboration of these three points of view, or evocations of truth, that the work of the sixth group of disciples will be concerned. So every time these three are offered for no matter what group, we do get a clearer idea of the functioning of the group and what those who are participating must do to bring these seed groups into real hierarchical usefulness. So they are, what are they? Three points of view, three evocations of the truth, three doctrines, and what are they going to be? Let us see. Number one, the fact of the Spirit of God, both transcendent and immanent, a newer idea perhaps, not newer to the Christ and those who really followed his interior teaching, but new to so many who simply believe that God can only be found in its transcendental state. So the fact of the Spirit of God, both transcendent and immanent, will be demonstrated, and also a similar fact in relation to man. The modes of their approach to each other via the soul, the transcendent to the immanent, will be indicated. The aspect of the emerging truth, this aspect might be called transcendental mysticism. Sounds very Neptunian. And I suppose it is. So here we have a clearer idea of what the Spirit really is, and that will lead into the philosophical teaching of the monad. Okay. Then the fact of the divine quality of the forces, capital F, in nature and in man, and the method of their utilization for divine purposes by man. And this might be called transcendental occultism. It's much more filled with scientific detail and is related to the fifth force in psychology, not just the fourth force, which began, let's say, in the middle of the 20th century and was prepared by such psychologists as Carl Jung. So this is an aspect of the New World religion, mysticism and occultism, Neptune and Uranus, giving us occult mind. And then the fact implied in the first, that humanity as a whole is an expression of divinity, a complete expression, plus the allied fact that of the divine nature and work of the planetary hierarchy, and the mode of approach of these two groups in group form to each other, humanity and the hierarchy. And we've seen that diagram of the triangle, Shambhala hierarchy and humanity, at three different stages of evolution, the past, present, and future. The approach is taking place. It's not completed yet. This might be called transcendental religion. The minute we use a word like transcendental, we've entered the realm of the spiritual triad. So transcendental religion is found here, and it is a more general type of consideration. And we have to, the new group of world servers has to find a way to facilitate this mutual approach. Transcendental mysticism, the immanence and transcendental qualities, immanent and transcendental qualities of God, our planetary logos, and beyond. And how this affects the interior life of man. And the immanent and the great transcendent being of God have a type of approach to each other which is facilitated by the consciousness of the soul. So maybe, you know, that's a little more obscure than some of the others, but it's an interior feeling. It's maybe akin to some kind of sensitive registration, as Neptune is the planet of sensitivity. I'm pretty sure, you know, that this is a Neptunian approach. Number two is a Uranian approach, and I don't know if we can pin a planet to the third approach. Maybe it's Jupiterian in a certain sense. It's certainly not Saturnian in the sense of hide-bound dogma, but at the same time, it has to consider the karmic factors, which always involves Saturn. So the approach of the two groups is not just ordinary religion, as comes under orthodoxy, in which Saturn plays a big role, but it is a very expansive approach, more expansive than the types of religion that we have now, except, of course, for the mystical branches of these religions. So, humanity as a whole is an expression of divinity, a complete expression, plus the allied fact of the divine nature and work of the planetary hierarchy. So this is giving added dignity to the human kingdom, and the whole idea of the fallen man and the old Adam and man as born in sin without the possibility of redemption except through Jesus or the Christ, those ideas will fade as the true dignity of man is understood. And that will be understood as we begin to understand the true constitution of the human being and discover that the soul is real and ongoing in the great reincarnational cycles, which must be proven. Not only must survival be proven, but reincarnation of that which survives must be proven. Okay. So these are the three factors involved. Three evocations of truth, three doctrines that the New World Religion will present to humanity. And of course, we're, except for the mystical approaches of the present day and the esoteric approaches, which are small in number relatively, we are far from the transcendental element. We can approach transmutation, transformation, even perhaps transfiguration, but transcendentalism is another reach into the cosmic ethers and brings us into the plane of revelation through intuition. More than this, I will not here indicate, as I seek to touch briefly upon the remaining three groups. I will, however, point out that we shall elaborate somewhat the technique of the presence of God. I guess this is done in the book Glamour, A World Problem. Approaching it from a new angle and that of the group, and also upon the technique of light. Yes, and definitely. He offers this technique of light in the book Glamour, A World Problem. Two lesser techniques I have at times called to your attention, and with these we will later deal, for they are in the nature of approaches to the other two. the technique of indifference and the technique of service. So see glamour, a world problem. And as we study the divine approaches, we shall see that they involve two parties or two groups, those found on the objective and those on the subjective side. So let us enlarge these techniques just a bit so they stand out in the text. The two that are found with quite a bit of elaboration, at least a fair amount of it, in the book Glamour, a World Problem, and then some preparatory or lesser techniques, the technique of indifference. Maybe that is used in connection with the dispersion of Maya. We have to have that a certain attitude of divine indifference, so we do not allow ourselves to become emotionally disturbed in the face of many unrealities which masquerade as realities. And the technique of service, you can find quite a bit of that in Esoteric Psychology 2, where he talks about the third law of the soul, the law of service, and what service really is, and what the techniques are relative to the different rays. I think it's quite an interesting study. So occultism does give the specifics, and occult psychology gives energy specifics, which even transpersonal psychology, the fourth force in psychology, does not give. A lot of the fifth ray is brought into occult psychology, fifth force psychology, and DK has in his two psychology books and the book Esoteric Astrology given us the information on the energies and forces which we must learn and apply. Okay, now on to the work of the seventh group. It's going to be, I think, the scientific servers, and they will be so important because science today, and especially in a fifth ray age like the Aquarian age, science is believable, credible. It's given respect by the Aryan mind, and we are in the fifth subrace of the Aryan root race, the five of five, so science stands out as a necessity to help us make a transition out of the age of pure belief that was common in the Piscean era. So the work of the seventh group, which is in the field of science, is closely allied to that of the seventh ray. It is the seventh group. But of course, Aquarius brings in the fifth ray in terms of transmission, and it is paralleled by the cycle of the seventh ray. And by certain rulers, or at least certain rulers which carry the seventh ray, like Uranus, show up powerfully in Aquarius. So science and magic are going together here. It is strictly magical. See, it's what does it say here? It's closely allied to that of the seventh ray, the seventh group is, and is one with a most practical physical purpose. Now the proof of reincarnation, proof of survival and of reincarnation is going to be left to the scientific servers, and we can see how the fifth ray and the seventh ray would both apply to that forthcoming proof. It is strictly magical in its technique, and this technique is intended to produce a synthesis between the three aspects of divinity upon the physical plane, or between life, the solar energies, and the lunar forces. And basically, what we have here, in a way, is monad, soul, and personality. So this involves a difficult task and much understanding. The work to be done is not easy to comprehend, and it will be carried forward by first-ray workers. Okay, this is the place where we see an interesting blend of rays. It will be carried forward by first-ray workers, assisted by seventh-ray aspirants, but using fifth-ray methods. They will thus combine in their personnel the work of the destroyer of outgrown forms, the findings of the scientists who penetrated behind the outer form to the motivating energy, and the practical work of the magician who, under the law, creates the new forms as expressions of the inflowing life. And so this is an important section when you realize that scientific workers of the seventh group will have first-ray techniques, seventh-ray techniques, fifth-ray techniques. They will all work together. It is interesting that the third ray is not involved in this case. Okay, so this is magical work, the field of science, and it has a most practical purpose, and as DK has said elsewhere, the whole survival and reincarnational type of research will be carried on by this group, and I suppose it will, well, they're already doing it, really. They will come closer and closer to proving the survival of the inner man following the death of the body, and they will eventually be able to prove in a scientific manner the truth of reincarnation, which will certainly lessen the fear of death. The overcoming of the fear of death, which was largely implanted in the psyche of humanity by the lords of materialism as a method of control through fear, will soon be overcome. And the ability to come and go from the body, which I suppose can be consciously done by the time the sixth petal is unfolded, that ability will also show us that we, the true identity, are not the body. That's one of the most important realizations. We may say it, but do we know it? And we have to have the experience which tells us, wait, we're not the body. We're something else, and the body is simply an instrument to realize that we are also not the emotional field and not the lower mental field requires still more advanced steps. Okay. So the technique involved here is to synthesize three types of energies: the life energy, the solar fire energies, again, it's Uranus, Neptune, and the lunar forces. Interestingly, related to Saturn. If you look at the glyph of Saturn, you're going to see the moon there. And you will also see the moon when you look at Mercury, which is a far older and more occult planet than Venus, from which the glyph of the moon is missing. So both the moon, Saturn and Mercury, which do combine to bring us accepted discipleship and even the type of discrimination we need at the fourth initiation, those two planets we find to be quite closely related and having a third ray component. We say the moon is a fourth ray planet, and maybe it veils some kind of hidden fourth-ray planet, but basically it does represent the third aspect of divinity. So this is it's not just fifth-ray workers. We have to destroy the old form in order to keep progress, the progression, evolution moving forward. We have to know the laws that cause this, and the fifth ray can help reveal that. So can the seventh. We are studying in a way there the garment of God, which is a special fifth ray study, and the practical work of the manifesting magician who, under the law, creates the new forms. And we can say that during the gestation period, the physical body is being created through its relationship to the etheric model, which is ruled by the seventh ray. So this will be a kind of revelation of the origins of the human form, and the right position of the personality relative to higher energies, and the right position of the dense physical body relative to the etheric patterns. Okay. This group of disciples, now this is interesting. They will make a close study of the problem of evil, and they will bring about a better understanding of the purpose existing in matter or substance, and the inflowing, enlightened, and different purpose of the soul aspect. I mean, evil is much connected with the older energies, the tendencies of which should have by this time been outlived. So a close study of the problem of evil, the resistance of matter to the etheric conditioning which brings in potentially higher energies. It also brings in astral energy, which may be problematic. But maybe we would not have suspected that this is the case. So this is the intelligent research to finally understand what evil is. I think as a race we have many examples of thinking we understand what evil is, but maybe we don't understand the relationship of evil to matter with material tendencies imbued within it. We don't understand the green versus the blue. We don't understand the old patterns of the previous solar system and of the moon chain compared with principles which are connected now with the cosmic ethers. There's so many occult factors we just don't understand that give us a clearer idea of what evil is. And on our particular planet, there is quite a confrontation between the third aspect and the second aspect of divinity. And if the third prevails, we have evil prevailing, or the past prevailing, when in fact the newer patterning of energies under the second ray, the ray of the divine pattern, must prevail. So he goes on and says, that is why in my earlier discussion of the subject, I linked the results of religion and science together. It's like Master Jesus and Master Hilarion working together. Maybe Hilarion, the former Saint Paul, being a kind of a disciple of the Master Jesus. Religion is concerned with the awakening to conscious purpose of the soul in man or form, while science is concerned with the activity of the outer form as it lives its own life, yet slowly becomes subservient to that purpose and to soul impress. I think there's even a time when sixth ray souls have for a number of lives a seventh ray personality, and I think we can see how this would apply to the scientific practical approach. And there's always, for many years, been a war between doctrinaire religion and the revelations of science. Maybe this is now coming to an end. This is the thought contained in the words scientific service used by me. And the work of this group is triple. Well, we're going to always expect the discovery of a triple aspect of applied force. So religion and science, Hilarion and the Master Jesus working together, and also Master R coming into the picture. He's under the third ray, but he concentrates upon the seventh. So whoever may be the unknown Shohan now on the directing the seventh ray ashram will also be involved. 5, 6, and 7 working together. So linking religion and science. And here, you know, here we have the distinction of what they are. Awakening to the soul, yes, through religion, and awakening to the form, understanding the activity of the form, which must support the expression of soul life. All of this has yet to be achieved, but it's on its way in a scientific magical era, which is imminent. I would say another 100 years, and we'll really know that we are into the age of Aquarius, with its powerful fifth ray and seventh ray energies available in new ways. We have a little taste of it right now, but scientific application is so often destructive today. It involves the building of weaponry and more sophisticated means of destruction. And the seventh ray is often a tool of totalitarianism and providing a kind of regimentation, an anti-individuality, which we see in certain totalitarian nations. So anyway, what about the work? The work of this seventh group? Let's see what it suggests. Number one, they will take the most advanced inferences of the workers in the field of science and then will formulate the new hypotheses upon which the next immediate steps forward in any particular scientific field will be founded. This is what the group can do. It will be a practical work. I think when you combine the fifth ray and seventh ray, you get the maximum of practicality with respect to the use of the form. And these are inferences, you know, they have to be carried further. They are not necessarily proven facts yet, but based upon research, one can intelligently infer. And then new conjectures, hypotheses will be created, and the scientific field will be directed forward according to the more advanced thinkers in the disciplic initiate seed groups. Okay, number two. Sounding more Iranian. Okay. What else will they do? They will get rid of unwanted squares, brackets, and pictures. And number two, they will avail themselves of the sensitive reactions which the new spiritual approaches, as taught by the world religion of the time, it's still ahead, will have made possible, utilizing the inferences, again, you know, the hints, the possibilities, the tentative reaching into the future in a rational manner, which probably leads to truth. Utilizing the inferences thus made available in connection with the inner world of spirit. They will outline the nature of the incoming forces which will determine and motivate the culture of our time. And what can we say about this? It's sounding like they're taking advantage of a kind of Neptunian sensitivity. When you look at when you look at some of the maps that are presented, can I find them? Maybe here is a map. Let's see if I can find this. Right here. We find that Uranus and Neptune stand apart from this. Oh, I better show it to you, right? We find that Uranus and Neptune stand apart from a very complex and even sevenfold demonstration related to Saturn. These, you know, within this ovoid, this kind of egg, we find the three synthesizing planets, and we do see that the most material of these planets has a much higher, more highly developed system of associated planetary schemes. So basically we have Shiva, Uranus, Vishnu, Neptune, and Brahma, Saturn, and Brahma is the most developed of all. It's just like when you look at the plains here. The majority of plains come under Brahma, atmic, buddhic, manasic, kamic, and physical. And the second plane under Vishnu, and the first plane under Shiva. And here, so you can see it, is the diagram. So Brahma has the greatest number of planetary schemes. It has the greatest number of planes or subplanes associated with it. The Brahmic subplanes of a systemic nature are the lower five, like, you know, these five, compared to a Vishnu subplane and a Shivic subplane. But then again, from the cosmic perspective, all these planes are actually subplanes of the cosmic physical plane, and so Brahma represents five subplanes, which are our normal solar or systemic planes, Vishnu one, and Shiva another. And then if we were to, you know, go into this, and let's just see what we have here. Yeah, that's correct. These are cosmic planes, and the cosmic Brahma would represent the five lower supercosmic subplanes. And from here, the cosmic Atmic and down. And Vishnu Surya would represent the cosmic monadic, and Shiva, in the cosmic sense, would be the cosmic logoic plane. It's all part of a supercosmic system, and it's the etheric physical expression of a supercosmic logos, where the analogy continues to hold. Okay. And then we have dealt with the inferences of science and the new hypotheses. Again, you know, when new hypotheses show up, you tend to think, this is Uranian in nature. And then the sensitivity to the soul, number two, and then something more material takes place. This work of the within the field of scientific service. Taking the substance or material and the spiritual inferences and the scientific hypotheses, they will formulate those forms of service. It's practical, right? On the physical plane, which will precipitate with rapidity the plan for the immediate present. So now we're into the factor of actual materialization, precipitation, and I'll, you know, use the color green. They will release, the scientific servers, they will release through this blend of scientific knowledge and intuitive idealism. In other words, through Uranus and Saturn, and then through Neptune, okay, I just want to correct my typing here and just make sure that I have the correct, yes, I do. So they will release through this blend of scientific knowledge and intuitive idealism Interesting that idealism is also associated with the second ray very much. We've been reading that. Those energies which will further human interests, relate the subhuman, you know, to which we can relate Saturn, to the human through a right interplay of forces. The various kingdoms of nature will interplay more correctly and thus clear the way of those intellectual impediments which will and always have blocked man's approach to the superhuman world or super mundane world, to use a term that is used for Agni Yoga books recently translated and released. Okay. So, this is the most practical work that they do, and it has outer application. That's the point. It's not theoretical, it's not idealistic, it is manifestational. And, you know, these are the practical effects. I read somewhere recently that all of this work, all of our computer revolution and so forth, they are very definitely related to certain of the apparently theoretical Einsteinian discoveries. But those remote to most, those formulas remote to most, can be embodied in practical inventions that everybody can use. And so, you know, our whole telecommunication system, as it is shaping up, has a lot to do with the more theoretical concerns. Einstein, you know, had that Uranian-Neptunian insight, but then his Mercury and Saturn were conjunct in Aries, and so many new inventions and possibilities of enhancing physical plane life could come from that which was more occult and idealistic. I doubt that it would be possible to do much in connection with the forming of this group, and this for several reasons. Okay, well, you know, DK has said that if he needed scientific information, he would consult a fifth ray master, and also Alice Bailey was not, in the content of her mind, equipped to deal with the scientific concepts. But let's see what he says here. The first is that such a group cannot be formed until a certain scientific discovery has been made of such moment that our present scientific inhibition in recognizing the fact of the soul as a creative factor will disappear. This is one of those prophecies, you know. This discovery will be part of the acknowledged facts of science by the year 1975, and you know, one wonders whether this particular prophecy actually did come to pass or what it was. If it did come to pass, we do not yet recognize the soul scientifically, and it's considered by most to be strictly a religious term. You know, you're in the field of religion and not science, usually, when you speak of the soul. And secondly, AAB has not the necessary scientific knowledge to do more than grasp the broader outlines of the intended work, and then only primarily from the angle of the more mystical and philosophical approaches. Nor, my brothers, have I. So it's interesting to see such a learned master make this admission. You know, he is the major expert in rheological, astrological, creative, hierarchical energies, but not in terms of the modern scientific knowledge. Nor, my brothers, have I. It will take a fifth or seventh degree initiate to deal with this matter. Though I could invoke the assistance of such a brother, it does not seem to me a profitable expenditure of force at this time. A little humor here. The sigh of relief from AAB as she grasps the fact that there is one less group to tackle on my and your behalf would almost warrant my making this a major reason. he has this, you know, this dry humor. And of course, what a work it was as they worked together. And, you know, the later pictures of AAB, you know, show that she really worked herself into a state of exhaustion in the service of Master DK and the additional service of Master KH, which was more interior and not really brought to light. So secondly, there is this there is this second factor, and also a great discovery that looks like it will reveal what the soul is scientifically. I wonder if discoveries along the etheric line have prepared the way here. So a certain scientific discovery must be made regarding the presence of the soul as a scientific factor, and that had not been done at that time, and we can question if it has been done now, would we recognize it? There's been all kinds of particle physics discoveries, and there have been Kirlian photography revelations and auric revelations, you might say, but I wonder about establishing scientifically the fact of the soul, which seems the duty of France, as he tells us, with its Piscean fifth ray soul. Okay. Now, there's a little bit more, and we're going to continue with it. Let us now pass on to a brief indication of the work of the eighth group. He elaborates later upon it, which is psychological service. In this field, the work will be lifted out of the realm of the strictly human and will concern itself with wider issues. For my brother, there are wider issues than those which concern the human family alone. The work of these disciples will cover the following three issues. So here is the eighth group. And he tells us that the people who are more academically inclined along the line of theosophy are following often this particular method is being put forth in the eighth group. So what ray does it come under? Well, you know, maybe all the rays, but the second ray and the fourth ray are certainly prominent. So what will the work of these disciples bring? Number one, the relation of the human soul to the subhuman kingdoms in nature, and the place of the human kingdom as an intermediary between the three higher kingdoms and the three lower. So not strictly a human consideration, but looking at the human kingdom as a bridging group. So we'll make that a little larger. The relation to the subhuman kingdoms, but also to still higher kingdoms. He doesn't elaborate here. And then number two, the quality of the soul in the three subhuman kingdoms, with particular emphasis upon the animal and vegetable kingdom. The consciousness of the mineral kingdom is so far removed from the human that it is not possible for us to formulate anything about it in words or to identify ourselves with it until after the expansion of consciousness, which takes place after the third initiation, that of the transfiguration. So we are responsible as a kind of macrocosm to at least two of the lower kingdoms, the animal and the vegetable, which are perhaps close enough to our consciousness so that we can do something constructive. And number three, a study of the plan. The psychologist will do this, as it appears at this time to be working out in the five kingdoms of nature, you know, also including the kingdom of souls, into which a certain proportion of humanity is entering, and then, in a larger sense, humanity taking the first initiation is in some generalized way entering the kingdom of souls. It will be apparent to you, okay, let's make that a study of the plan. Okay, at least at this time. The plan keeps going, and we cannot know about eventualities. So it will be apparent to you that the teaching connected with this group will be more definitely and academically occult in its significance than will be the case with the others, for it will be based on information contained in the Secret Doctrine and a Treatise on Cosmic Fire. So from a certain extent, when we work, to a certain extent, as we work within the Moria Federation, it's not only the educational group, which is of interest to us, but definitely the psychological group as we are approaching our work in an academic manner, academically occult. I would say that that pretty well describes a lot of the approach we are making in the Moria Federation. It will be founded upon certain premises contained in those volumes. Well, one is reminded, of course, of the three fundamentals of the Secret Doctrine, which are elaborated by the Tibetan in the beginning of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. Therefore, the members of this group of disciples will be of a more orthodox persuasion. They will be theosophists by nature and academic by disposition. Okay. So that tells us something a little different than we might suspect when we are thinking of psychological work. Actually, psychological healing would come more under the third group. And this has to do with the relationship of larger units, entities, you know, systems, the energetic relationship of these larger groupings to each other, and I suppose also to the human race. Okay, the nature of the anima mundi, you know, which is, we call it the world soul, it has different divisions. The fact of the subjective consciousness found in all forms, without exception, and this is, what do we call that? Hylozoism. And the existence of an interplay between these forms through the medium of the soul will be the major theme. The soul of, you know, psyche, soul, psychology, the soul will be studied as it appears in different forms and in different kingdoms. Soul sensitivity and reaction to the energy in any form will be the training objective of the group members. Soul sensitivity. All souls are at one with the Oversoul, we are told, in the third fundamental of the secret doctrine. Owing to the difficulty of this task, the members of the eighth group will be chosen from the personnel of the other groups, for they will have had a fair measure of training in their preliminary work. Two groups will then be interlocking groups, that which is formed of the key people in all the groups, that's the 10th group, and this one. So, 8 and 10, groups 10 and 8 are, what can we call them, composite groups. And so if we find ourselves, I've often puzzled, you know, over the work within the University of the Seven Rays and the Moria Federation. I say, well, it seems to be the eighth group as well as the fourth group. And now here we see a reason. Other groups provide the personnel for the eighth group, and certainly three from each, the 27 found in the 10th group. So that makes sense, I think. So many people in the Moria Federation are occultly academic by their disposition, and, you know, certainly I have been that, and some of my closest co-workers have been that. So their connection to the psychological workers, considered in this way, is pretty strong. Okay. Now, so let's just kind of, it's difficult to know, you know, how, what color we put this in. I think Mercury is much involved here, and I'm going to use the yellow color in general. And then the nature of the world soul in its different divisions. and the interplay between the consciousness existing within these forms, that interplay being a soul interplay. I doubt that we have much of an idea of what the anima mundi really is, but we do have that concept of hylozoism, and the idea there is that all forms are ensouled, and there is no such thing as inanimate matter or matter without soul. So this, for me, clarifies certain things about the constitution of the eighth group and its expansiveness and its transcendence of the particular psychological factors which must be applied to strictly human psychology. We're told that the Treatise on Cosmic Fire is sort of the psychological extension or interpretation of the secret doctrine. And we're dealing with great entities there. Planetary logoi, solar logoi, cosmic logoi, the one about whom naught may be said. We're dealing with all of their interrelations, which are astrological to a certain extent, but are certainly rheological as well. So the interplay between these different orders of entities is taken up in a treatise on cosmic fire, even in, you know, greater detail than in the secret doctrine. Treatise on Cosmic Fire is more energy specific than the secret doctrine is. Well, what about the ninth group? We're going to do our best here to finish this, and that will be the end of the commentary on the entire book. The ninth group, whose project is financial service, will be one of the most practical and interesting from the standpoint of the present world situation and modern conditions. I may begin to organize this group before long. I guess it didn't happen, provided some of my disciples show me the subjective signs for which I look, which involves a right understanding and spiritual appreciation of money. By this, I do not mean that any of you who do show such signs will be in this group, but you will provide the right conditions which will make its inception possible. One or two of the key people, however, may form part of the financial service group if the plan works out as hoped and intended. Well, this is... It seems to be written. Do I understand this properly? I hope I do. This letter, this document, I hope I can reach it. Sorry for the kind of little delay here. Yes, we are in the continuation of this essay on the seed groups, and let's see, the work of the seed groups, 1938, okay, if I have been saying sometimes the 40s, I've been incorrect. 1938. So it's more like 82 years ago. So that does make sense. This is a rather lengthy essay, and it leads to the conclusion of this introductory section. So 1938. That's what we see here. So, you know, I was a little concerned when he said that I may start this group before long. I thought for a moment that we were dealing with the late 40s. Sometimes, you know, I get a little absent-minded here. But with 1938, it was possible. And yet, of course, the problem of the war, the impending war, was very much present. So he's basically saying that he would or could start it if he received the proper subjective response. And maybe that would not have been exactly in order, because he left off with the political workers and never did organize a group of nine for religion, for science, even for psychology. That would have been a harder organizational task. And then here we are with group number nine. So he would organize it if his disciples showed him the subjective signs for which he was looking. They would create the right atmosphere, and maybe a couple of them would actually be members of the group. So the task to be undertaken by this group, the ninth group, is to study the significance of money as directed and appropriated energy. In the Dina books, of course, we have that meditation, which is to be used every week, and we do, and many do. The direction of force produces concretization, and the work is then in the field of magical endeavor. As with the work of the other groups, the task to be carried out falls into three major categories. So let us, obviously the color is going to be mostly green here, except maybe when philanthropy is particularly involved. Let's see what are the three types of work that are to be undertaken by this ninth and quasi-magical group. You know, Master R has his influence here. The third ray and the seventh ray, being two financial rays, have their influence here. So let's just say what kind of work will this ninth group perform? So, number one, an effort to understand the nature of prana, or of vital etheric energy, and the three qualities which distinguish it. So we sometimes say, you know, why this? Because money is concretized energy. And the three qualities which distinguish this vital etheric energy are inertia, tamas, activity, rajas, and rhythm, or sattva, tamas, rajas, sattva. Okay. When the mineral wealth of the world was undiscovered and unused, we had the stage of tamas at its deepest and most inert point. Much concerning money today is related to the karma and destiny of the mineral kingdom. With this, however, we need not here concern ourselves. Well, the forms of money have undergone change from the metallic to the vegetable paper money to the mental electronic indications of money. So we have, you know, many of our financial records are not necessarily represented by paper or by metal, but they live in the electronic world. And thus, of course, can be more easily manipulated. The processes of the pranic life were originally carried out in the realm of barter and exchange of that which is found upon the surface of the earth, and later went down into the depths, thus bringing into fluidity the deepest and densest expression from the human standpoint. I guess there are denser expressions yet, of divinity. And this is a point to be remembered. And this is the use of metals. Today, the process is being reversed. And money is connected with the produce of the vegetable kingdom in the form of paper money, founded upon the mineral wealth of the world. The standard for this, the gold standard, or using metals as a foundation for the symbolism of paper money. This is an interesting subjective reality to have in mind. So we begin on the surface, then we plumb the depths, probably, you know, Vulcan and Pluto. Then we rise out of those depths and use the vegetable kingdom. And now we're in a very different world where money is represented by numbers that are stored in electronically. Okay, so that's one of the things this group will do. They will have the effort to understand the nature of prana and vital etheric energy. Because after all, when there is money, it represents the ability, because of the response of mankind to what it symbolizes, to expend energy on behalf of the one who offers the symbol to the one who expends the energy. So we will do things for the symbol of money, but it only really works because everybody agrees that it shall work. The paper we exchange, or even the metals we exchange, have not so much intrinsic value as their symbolic value. Okay. What else, what other kind of work will this group do? A study, notice the word study, it's occurring. A study of the processes whereby money has been steadily deflected from personal uses, both in the good and in the evil sense. Well, in our money meditation found in Dina 2, there is a question about the use of money today and how it can be deflected towards the work of the Christ and his hierarchy, how it can be lifted out of the materialistic stream into a more spiritual stream, out of the darkness into the light. I do not, however, intend to write a treatise upon finance. It would largely, I guess he could, it would largely be a record of man's dire selfishness but I seek to deal with money as the hierarchy sees the problem and to consider it as a form of energy prostituted at this time, largely used for material purposes, as it says in the meditation, personal and material purposes, prostituted at this time to material ends or to the selfish aspirations and ambitions of well-meaning servers who still don't have the necessary wisdom to know what must be materialized and when according to the divine plan. They are limited in their view and need to get a picture of the possibilities inherent in the present situation, which could deflect much of this form of concretized divine energy into constructive channels and ways of light. I often think, you know, that to simplify the whole thing, we have money for the light, money for love, money for the to promote the sacrificial will, which will manifest the divine plan. Money for light, love, and the right kind of power, which arises when the higher patterns manifest on the earth. So we must change the channels in which money presently operates, and they must, the money, the prana, the energy, must operate within the ways of light, the paths of light, constructive channels and ways of light. Well, it's interesting. I think DK could write a treatise on any of these subjects, but he has to make a decision regarding the best use of his time. And then we have also a study of the law of supply and demand. It sounds like a lot of education has to go into the training of the members of this ninth group. They all have to go to business school, you know, of a hierarchical type, so that there can be made available for the master's work through the medium of the world disciples of pure motive and skill in action and tried responsibility, not just the intention to be responsible, that which is needed, and my brothers, sorely needed by them, capital T, sorely needed by the masters, in order to bring about the manifestation of the divine plan. So what have we so far? The effort to understand the nature of prana and of vital etheric energy and of tamas, rajas, and sattva. That's part of the work. Understanding and study. A study of the processes whereby money has been steadily deflected from personal uses, both in the good and in the evil sense, as I suppose there is the right kind of application to personal uses. There are so many people whose personal lives need to be relieved compared to what they are now, lived in a state of impoverishment and disease and lack of opportunity. And then the third point of the work to be done by this group, a study of the law of supply and demand. Because after all, the things by which men live have to be provided. And these things will be provided by a group of first degree initiates on the seventh ray, we are told. So then, next. I don't know if he's going to get into number 10. Maybe not. Money has been deflected into entirely material ends, even in the its philanthropic objectives. People don't have a clear motive. The most spiritual use now to be found in the world is the application of money to the purposes of education. And that's money for light, more light. And just about everybody agrees that this is necessary. And it is necessary, you know, to make one's way in the world and also just to live a more efficient life. So the field of education is the most spiritual use at this time of the money in the world. Of course, there's also the whole idea of money for right human relations, money for harmony, you know, among the members of humanity, money for love, basically. And that is a bit more subtle than money for light. When it is turned away from the construction of the form side and the bringing about solely of material well-being of humanity and deflected from its present channels into truly spiritual foundations, much good will be done. The philanthropic ends and the educational objectives will not suffer, and a step forward will be made. So even money for light is presently in question. I'm just thinking about the effect of this pandemic that we're passing through, and how the whole question of how education shall proceed is before the judgment of humanity. Will there be education always in presence with each other, or will the methods of computer communication be used, the virtual education? Maybe there's much less that's undesirable at the present time if the education proceeds in a virtual manner. So this time, however, this time of turning away from material construction into truly spiritual foundations is not yet. This time is not yet. But the spiritualizing of money and its massing in quantities for the work of the great ones, you know, through the trusts, as he discusses it, the disciples and the Christ, is part of a much needed world service and can now make a satisfactory beginning. But it must be carried forward with spiritual insight, right technique, and true understanding and purity of motive and selflessness are taken for granted. No personal motives which seek somehow, however subtly, the aggrandizement of the personality. So many people, you know, who are ostensibly philanthropic are still seeking to enhance their reputation and even enhance their own accumulation of further resources. Now, it appears in this externalization book. Let's go to page 61. And we have reached the point where I did begin this work on this book some time ago with the immediate task. I thought somehow to dive into it and be a little more current than to start from the very, very beginning. But there was so much valuable information about the different groups and the different methods of serving found in the beginning of the book that one just had to go back and deal with it. So, friends, it looks like he's not going to take up here that synthetic group, which is magical in its nature, and which draws three disciples from each one of the nine other groups, and also the constituents of group number eight. Is drawing disciples, not necessarily in those numbers, from the other groups. And I wonder if group nine is included, following group eight, or just the seven preceding. So this is a long book. It's a book of some 700 pages. And we've been working on it quite a while. I took a bit of a break, maybe in the middle, and changed the platform and using, you know, a different communication system. And I was asked to please continue, and I did. And for quite a number of months now, I've been working on that continuation and have finally finished commenting on all of the words that I can find in this book. I may have skipped over something inadvertently, but hopefully not. And, you know, basically, we have come to the end here of our work. And it is my hope that I will be able to continue with some other books and maybe offer actual sort of online classes so we can discuss them together. I realize that this particular method that I'm using now doesn't give you a chance to ask questions, to make comments, and all that. And well, you know, to do the job completely, we might have to go to the year 2050. And that's, you know, not going to be possible for any normal human being. Very few of us live past 100. So I just hope that your studies here will be profitable and that the type of service that you are equipped to do will be enhanced because you know more about how the hierarchy expects us to serve. And that in general, your contribution to the divine plan is enhanced because of the information in this book, and you will be more rightly oriented toward the kind of service which as a soul you know and understand. Maybe as a personality, all that information has not come through, but increasingly it will, and we will know how we are to serve. So I just want to end with the great invocation which presents to us the very reason we're doing all this work, you know, to animate the new group of world servers and to facilitate within the range of our ability the externalization of the hierarchy and the reappearance of the Christ, the two most, the servers and the externalization, reappearance, these are the major factors in Master DK's ashram, an ashram whose major theme is the promoting of right human relations. So let us do the great invocation together, and then study hard and meditate deeply and find a way to constantly improve our service. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. So friends, lots of love, many blessings, and in this kind of work, at least, you will hear the Tibetan's words again. And if my words can be helpful in certain instances, then that's good too. We'll be working on the next book for you, and this will soon be up on makara.us and eventually on YouTube. So, all the very best to you. Bye for now.